As we prepare to celebrate the birth of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, beware that some will use the holiday spirit as a cover to do nefarious things inside government. Find out more next on Principles and Policies. Hello, this is Chuck Michaelis. I'm your host here on Principles and Policies. What do I mean by all that? Well, first of all, Merry Christmas, folks. Merry Christmas. We do both podcast and a broadcast on a live radio station, WLRY. And so we're assuming that a lot of you out there listening are Christians. It's not necessarily fully true. For those of you who are not Christian, we still say Merry Christmas, and may you come to the realization that Jesus Christ is Lord of all. That being said, there's a lot of stuff going on, folks. You're all aware of this. There is a sort of a pall that's cast over the holidays this year, and by the holidays I mean Christmas, New Year's. I'm not going to do one of those happy holidays things. You can get plenty of that on secular radio if you want it, or on television, if that's what you're looking for. No, I'm talking about the celebration of the Advent, the birth of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Well, so what is going on? Well, gosh, do we have a border crisis? Do we have an election crisis? Do we have other constitutional crises? We have a president of the United States who has taken bribes under the auspices of being paid by his son, who's taken the bribes. It's a third party bribery. I'm saying that I agree. He has not been convicted of this, and in order to be convicted, you actually have to be seriously investigated. And the Justice Department is not really seriously investigating. Hunter got indicted for a number of things. And what that means is that they've realized they can't keep the investigation away from the Biden family. Therefore, they're going to go ahead and throw Hunter under the bus. Here's what will happen. Under our current Justice Department, or as they used to say under Barack Obama, the Department of Just Us, because it was being used specifically to protect certain privileged groups, that is, the political elite on the left side of the aisle, and used to prosecute people on the right. And that's exactly what's going on. All you have to do is look at the January 6th prosecutions, where people have been thrown in jail or waiting trial for 2 years. Journalists are being forced to surrender for basically covering the story because they're coming from the right hand side of the aisle. They were not as critical of the rioters on January 6th. Now, I'll be quite honest. If you pay attention to my show, and if you pay attention to when Barry and I were co-hosts on this show, you will have heard me said that, was there a riot on January 6th? Yes, there was. Was there illegal activity? Absolutely. You cannot break into the Congress building, wreak havoc, steal things, run around at the speaker's dais, and bang the gavel, and all that stuff. And you can't do that. That's a riot. Was there an armed insurrection? Okay, let's talk about that, because this is one of the things. This will lead into something else. Was there an armed insurrection on... armed insurrection is a redundancy. An insurrection is an armed revolt aimed at overturning an existing government, generally in a capital city. So was there an insurrection and was it armed? And the answer is no. The only person that was killed, despite the news media, I think it still sneaks out occasionally that a policeman was killed. No, he wasn't. He died of a stroke a couple of days, 2 or 3 days later. He had been hit in the head with a fire extinguisher. Nope, didn't happen. All fictional, all designed to, elicit a response. It was propaganda designed to elicit a response. Okay, so was there an armed insurrection? Who was the only person killed on January 6th? The only person killed on January 6th was a woman who was shot in the back, and she was unarmed. Shot in the back by a D.C. policeman who, quote-unquote, feared for his life from a woman who had her back turned to him and was unarmed. So, and what happened to this officer, Byrd? Well, he's gotten a promotion. Rather than being cashiered from the force for an excessive use of force, no, he's been given a promotion. Meanwhile, the parents of, I can't think of her name, Ashley something. I can look that up. The woman's name was Ashley Babbitt. And I don't want to quibble too much. She wasn't the only one killed. There were other people who got trampled in the rush to get in the Capitol. I'll give you that. There are a number. When you put this into, I don't use Google because Google is the enemy. Sorry to bring this. Is it still bring up more results than everybody else? Yes, but I use Brave and I use DuckDuckGo. Why do I use DuckDuckGo? Because they don't store and sell your search information. Are they biased? Yes, certain things are excluded from the search. You can always find stuff. Sometimes you have to go, I never do the thing that a lot of people do is entrust the first 5 entries or 10 entries on any search engine. I go deeper. The only thing that really bugs me is once you do that, if you put in multiple words, it starts parsing the words. Okay, that's neither here nor there. Fact is, there were about 3 or 4 people who were killed on January 6th, mostly having to do with being trampled, and of course Ashley Babbitt, who was shot. And I have to laugh. I one of the things I saw was a Reuters story. Folks, Reuters is one of the worst news sources available. Here's it from April 14th, 2021. The U.S. Justice Department has closed its investigation into the death of Ashley Babbitt, a participant in a January 6th riot, shot by U.S. Capitol Police, saying there was no evidence to prove the officer who shot her had violated her civil rights. Okay, this is not the topic today, so let's not go there. The fact is, he did violate her rights. He shot her in the back. There was no warning. He just simply raised his gun and shot her in the back. And he later claimed that he feared for his life from a woman who had no weapon and had her back turned to him. She was an easy target. He took it and he shot her. It was supposed to get everybody to panic and stop. If that tactic had been used anyplace else, and I hate to say this, but if the colors of the participants, Ashley Babbitt was white and the officer involved was black, if it had been reversed, the hue and cry, the outrage would have just simply been deafening. So let's not go there. The fact is that what happened there was a riot. It was not an insurrection. Supposedly Wikipedia says it was designed to overturn the 2020 election. No, it was not. It was to support the idea that Trump wanted recounts done, legitimate recounts and investigations of fraud at the polls, which in several states, in more than enough states to overturn the election results, it has become clear that there was massive fraud. And just remember, in the way most states have set up their electoral vote rewarding systems, in most states, Ohio being one, folks, most of you are going to hear this are in Ohio. We have a winner-take-all system. In other words, whoever gets the majority of votes in the state wins all the electoral votes in the state. There are two states that do not do this, and they're doing it more like the founders had hoped the states would set it up. They award electoral votes on the basis of who wins a congressional district. Because remember, constitutionally, you get as many electoral votes as you have representatives and senators. So everybody gets two senators, and everybody has at least one member of the House of Representatives. So the minimum number of electors you can have in from a state is three. Now, unfortunately, we have a constitutional amendment that counts D.C. as a separate state, which is a huge mistake. D.C. votes ought to be counted since all of D.C., the District of Columbia, was originally part of Maryland. The Virginia portion of the District of Columbia was given back, oh gosh, in the 1840s. For some reason, I don't, Alexandria and some of those suburbs were originally part of D.C. and on the Virginia side of the Potomac. And again, it was given back to Virginia in the 1840s for some reason. There, I've never actually gotten into that. Okay, so every state has at least three electors. And the two states that award electoral votes by congressional district are Maine and Nebraska. And that's why Maine and Nebraska are always the last to show, and they always have some kind of a situation where they show stripes through it or some method of indicating that it's not, the state didn't go fully for one candidate or another. Well, it never, almost never does. Sometimes it does. Almost never does. Now, who gets the additional, in those states, who gets the additional two Senate votes? The two Senate votes go to the majority winner, the majority vote getter. But remember, this is the situation whereby the majority of votes does not necessarily win the presidency, and that drives people who are pure democracy people nuts. But what it does is it's designed, the whole system is designed. Remember when at the Constitutional Convention, the big fight was between the big states and the little states. And the big states, the advocates for the big states went in and said, well, we're paying most of the revenue, we have the bigger populations, and we should basically run the show, is what they said. They wanted to be in charge. And the little states said, if you pull that off, if you do that, we will withdraw from this union. So there were several plans that got debated and debated and debated and debated. And it had, you know, basically what it did was it allowed the Constitution allows the states, small states essentially retain their sovereignty. All the states retain their sovereignty. That's actually the Ninth Amendment. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. And the tenth, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states and the people respectively, or to the people. That is a declaration of sovereignty of the states and the people. There are only certain powers delegated to the federal government. Okay, one of those things, if you recall, when you have a presidential election, and this is why we're talking about electors, it's a federal election. Now, is it done at the state level? Yes, it is, and state election laws apply. But there are certain restrictions. This is coming in the Voting Rights Act. let's not sugarcoat it. In a lot of the states, we're denying people of color the right to vote. That just simply cannot be denied. People like to pretend that it only happened in the South. No, it did not. It was a Northern phenomena and a Southern phenomena. There have been attempts to keep large groups of immigrants from Asia, from Africa, from South America, from Central America, from voting. Now, should they vote if they're not citizens? No, they should not. And that gets us into another aspect, which we may get to in this situation. But that being said, what's going on in Ohio is that the majority winner gets all the votes. Is this a mistake? Yeah, it's a horrible mistake, because what it does is it disenfranchises rural communities. The whole idea between breaking it up into congressional districts is that you can't overwhelm the country by a large vote in the city. And there has always been a disparity between the urban vote and the country vote. People in the country tend to be conservative. There are exceptions to this. And one of those exceptions is in Minnesota. Minnesota is a very progressive state and has been for many, many, many years. Wisconsin the same. Wisconsin and Minnesota. And the farmers in at least in Minnesota were very progressive. Very progressive. And I think you'll find that they actually have separate party systems in Minnesota. What's the name of the party? It's not Democrat and Republican. It's Democratic Farm Labor. And I forget what the Republican, I think the Republicans are just run as Republicans, but DFL. If Democrats essentially in Minnesota have to get the DFL endorsement or the imprimatur, if you will. They generally, DFL picks the whoever the Democratic nominee is. That being said, so most states, in order to, you know, this is the reason why Congress has not gone fully left. Why? Because the country representatives, the people that the news media loves to hate, people who don't necessarily represent city constituents, and their lack of city constituents reflects in their conservatism. There are people like when Ron Paul was a representative, he had a rural district in Texas, and boy, did the news media love to hate him. Why? Because he wasn't afraid of them. He basically, you know, he was one of those kind of guys, one of the few guys that didn't come out richer when he went in to the House of Representatives than when he came out. Ron Paul always said, well, if they throw me out, and this did happen. And actually, Newt Gingrich made sure that Ron Paul was, the Republican Party ran people against Ron Paul to get rid of him. Why? Because he was gadfly. He actually tried to hold their feet to the fire. This is one of the reasons I'm not a big fan of Newt Gingrich. I remember when he was running for president. And I get calls from people, oh, Newt Gingrich is running for president. And I'm like, well, that's unfortunate. Oh, you don't support him? No, I don't, and I won't. So thank you for asking. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, this it's American politics. And, you know, we can see it in the current Republican field. We all know that Donald Trump leads the field. Unless you've been living in a cage, Donald Trump is ahead in the Republican Party for the nomination as it stands now. Remember, we haven't even had our first. In fact, the Iowa caucuses are this month, generally in December of the year before, you know. So 2024 is the next presidential election. And folks, don't go run and hide in the closet and close the door and put the blanket over your head and say, wake me up when it's after November, you know, the first Tuesday after the first Sunday in November. Because that's not going to get you anywhere. You have to be engaged somehow in this process. Voting, campaigning, whatever. Okay, so Donald Trump's the lead guy. So the left, the absolute Donald Trump haters on the left are beginning to see that they nominated not just an empty suit, but first of all, a mentally ill, mentally incapacitated person to be president of the United States. They have to lead him around. They have he has to have cue cards. They have to have people whispering in his ear what to say. We've all seen the weird things that he said, complete non sequiturs, those kinds of things. That this man has no business. And who did they nominate to be the vice president? Did they nominate somebody who was a liberal and yet had sensibilities that a lot of conservatives could deal with? That's Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi Gabbard was a congresswoman who ran for president and was absolutely railroaded by the Democratic Party. Wasn't allowed in presidential debates, even though she more than met the criteria to be able to do that. All these things. And if you've seen her interviewed, she's a liberal who occasionally makes sense. I've always liked Tulsi Gabbard. It's interesting to note that her parents were Trump supporters, but she's a military veteran. She's got a lot of common sense. So why didn't they make her vice president? Well, we had Kamala or whatever. We had Kamala Harris, who was a screaming progressive. Frankly, obviously, a not very bright and yet arrogant one. Because some of if you've ever watched, they have basically removed her... Well, what shall we say? They've removed her opportunities to speak in public, even though that's kind of the job of the vice president. The vice president goes around, shows the flag, says, you know, we're here to do this and that and another thing. Mike Pence did some of the same stuff, and Mike Pence really fell apart. Frankly, I've never been a Mike Pence fan, but and he showed what he was made up of on January 6th, 2021. Kamala has gone around and embarrassed herself to the point where if Joe has a cerebral incident or has a breakdown and the 25th Amendment has to be invoked, and if you don't know what that is, basically when the President of the United States cannot perform his duties, or has to be removed due to health or whatever, the vice president has to step in and be the president. This has become a very frightening prospect. And if it's not frightening to you, then you haven't really paid attention, because Kamala Harris was, as the Attorney General from California, not above simply completely violating the rights of individuals. She had a bad rep. She had to withdraw from the presidential race in 2016 because her support was under 1%. And there was a lot of reason for that. We saw some of it last November with this passage of the recreational marijuana thing. Now, again, she's from California. And recreational marijuana there is much larger than it is here, to say the least. But she made her bones by going around and blocking people up for marijuana possession and distribution and throwing away the key, which made her not that popular. It made her popular with, she was trying to get conservative cred, even though she also did the same thing. If you once took up certain kinds of pills, she would go around, they would red flag you and come around and confiscate your weapons. If it came up in a record, they would search the records for people, medical records for people who had taken certain kinds of drugs at some point in the past, and would go and take their firearms. It was completely unconstitutional, completely violating their rights, claiming that they were, it showed a proclivity to mental illness if you had taken these, you know, anxiety drugs or whatever. Well, anxiety and schizophrenia are not the same thing. Sometimes for whatever reason, certain drugs got used by doctors who didn't really understand what was happening or whatever, you know, put you on Zoloft or whatever. And she was popular enough that she went from being Attorney General of California, which is a very odd state, let's face it, and she went to being Senator. And as a senator, frankly, she was an embarrassment. We had a number of those who went from, because they were a one-term senator, they decided they were going to run for president because the Democratic field was wide open. After Barack Obama, the Democratic field was wide open. And, of course, Donald Trump prevailed in 2016. And he prevailed because his opponent was who? It was Hillary Clinton, who was so odious, so disliked, so arrogant that, look, the news media assumed that they had it in the bag. They had polling data that showed they had it in the bag, despite, you know, this should tell you something about the viability of polls. Where do polls mostly get taken? They don't get taken in rural areas. They get taken in cities. Well, urban dwellers were more amenable to Hillary Clinton, even though a lot of them couldn't stand Hillary. And it looked like Hillary had it in the bag, and then all of a sudden Donald Trump shows up with it. Well, what do? We talk about Russian bots, Russian interference in the election, Russia collusion. And we hear about Russia collusion in the election from the campaign starting in 2016 until Donald Trump left office and after, until the whole narrative collapsed under the weight of its own fallacies. We had CNN every night coming out and said, we now have the smoking gun where we can prove that Donald Trump colluded with Russians. And that smoking gun would end up being simply a squirt gun. Nothing. A zero. A nothing burger. But every night, it didn't matter. CNN was one of the chief perpetrators of that. But don't forget the other outlets. ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, NPR, news services, AP. AP was one of the worst. Reuters was among the worst. We had foreign press. We had some of the British press. We had other people. There were other people who were like saying, look, this is nonsense. But they got brushed off to the side. And basically, a lot of people were blacklisted, more or less, because they were like, you know, shouldn't we actually try to go on evidence? I mean, we had people in the intelligence services who openly lied to Congress. We had people who were running investigations. The Trump Russia collusion thing with Eric Swalwell and all that business. And remember that they'd get people up there, they would try to embarrass them, and they would end up embarrassed. Why? Because there was no evidence. But some people would be touted as experts. These experts say this is true. We know that Trump did this and that and another thing. It all turned out to be nothing. It was completely fictional. And yet some of the same people are being touted as experts. Meanwhile, we have real smoking guns in the case of the sitting president of the United States taking huge amounts of money as a secondary bribe through his son, Hunter Biden. We had Joe Biden sitting at the Council on Foreign Relations saying that right around the time of the coup where Zelensky came to power in Ukraine, another reason why I don't think much about Ukraine, the most corrupt, before the Russia Ukraine thing, all this, you know, Ukraine was considered to be the most corrupt country in Europe. Why? Because of stuff like what happened that Joe Biden talked about at the Council on Foreign Relations, the CFR. He comes out and he says he got a prosecutor fired because his son was being investigated by this prosecutor for proffering bribes so that for gas leases in the Ukraine. And he also seems to have taken bribes from China. And, you know, you could argue that America's response and Joe Biden's response in the Ukraine, funneling them money after money after money war material and that kind of thing, comes from the bribes that he got through his son, Hunter. His support for Ukraine is based. Now, look, I have no use for the Russians. I understand where they're coming from in some of their territorial demands. Like, for instance, a lot of people don't know that Ukraine was shelling Russian nationals inside their own borders in the weeks and months before the Russians finally said, okay, that's enough. It had partly to do with the Russian seizure of the Ukraine, and part of that had to do with essentially, that has been a Russian national territory since one of the Russo-Turkish wars, and it ended up in the hands as an administrative district in the Ukraine, mostly because political considerations inside Russia. But Crimea was only part of Ukraine since 1954. Was never considered part of, and part of those eastern provinces in Ukraine were also handed over to Ukraine as an administrative district in 1954. So the territorial claims based on long time, look, Russia and Ukraine have been at each other's throats for hundreds of years. But let's get back to, you know, I got in the weeds a little bit, but let's go back to this. So we've got smoking guns all over the place. We've got smoking guns of the sitting president of the United States indirectly taking bribes from foreign countries. There is a constitutional prohibition against emoluments. It's the emoluments clause. And what that means, what's an emolument? An emolument is a payment. It's a payment from a foreign government. Why? To be an agent for a foreign government. Well, what's a bribe? It's an emolument. Now, if you recall, there was an attempt, again, from the left side of the aisle, there was an attempt to, they wanted to make this part of the impeachment of Trump, that he had taken emoluments because one of his hotels, or more, one or more of his hotels, had rented rooms to Russian diplomats and you know, high government officials and that kind of thing. Folks, that's not an emolument. That's a business transaction in which Donald Trump was not directly involved. Donald Trump was not directly involved in renting hotel rooms as president of the United States to Russian diplomats who simply liked his hotel and thought it might not be a bad idea to make sure they knew which side the bread was buttered on. But that is not an emolument. An emolument is a direct reception of monies from foreign governments, that is the true smoking gun. Every time, like I said, that we would hear, oh, we've got the smoking gun now. Listen, right now the news media is ignoring every smoking gun that there is against Joe Biden. Why? Because that would denude them of the ability to continue to point fingers at Trump. And it would damage the guy that they support. Now, most of them are beginning to lose their support for Joe Biden. They're all trying to figure out a way to talk him out of running in 2024. Everybody would like Joe Biden to withdraw in 2024. But they're being thwarted by ultra-liberals in some states. I just read a story that talked about essentially several states are going to make it so only Joe Biden can appear on primary ballots. Now, there are other people running for president on the Democratic side. You don't hear about it. Why? Well, because a prejudiced media is stoppering information. Now, most of these people are people that nobody really has ever heard of. I'll concede that. Most of these people, nobody knows who they are. And same thing on the Republican side. I saw a thing the other day that Asa Hutchinson, who was a liberal governor of Arkansas on the Republican ticket, he was a liberal Republican, a rhino, who was governor of Arkansas, is still running for president. He has less than 1% standing. He is a spark plug behind some of these lawsuits to get President Trump off the ballot in primaries. Now, let's go... That brings us to a point where I was trying to get to, and that is this ruling in Colorado that Trump may not appear on the ballot, and they're using an obscure constitutional prohibition. They're using an obscure... it's in the 14th Amendment. And if we'll go there, the 14th Amendment's really long, and I'm not going to sit here and bore you with the whole 14th Amendment. 14th Amendment is a revenge amendment. Most of the 14th Amendment is long since defunct because all the people who it was designed to neuter are dead. Now, who was it designed to essentially disenfranchise and remove eligibility for office from? It was designed to remove people who had served in government positions in the Confederate States of America and people who had served as in the military of the Confederate States of America. For instance, there were a lot of people who wanted to don't know that the president of the Confederacy, Jefferson Davis, had been a U.S. senator and had also been a United States Secretary of War. A lot of people don't know that. Well, they didn't want people like Jefferson Davis to be able to run for office in the new newly reconstituted United States after the states come back in the Union. There were a lot of shenanigans around the states were not allowed to come back into the Union unless they ratified the 14th Amendment, even though the whole fight was about the fact that they had never left. That was the whole condition of the war, was that when the states had left the Union, it was illegitimate. Well, how can it be illegitimate? I mean, for instance, they still had a Tennessee delegation, despite the fact that Tennessee had withdrawn from the Union. There were still members of the House who sat for Tennessee in the United States government. In fact, one of them became both Vice President of the United States and then President of the United States, and that's Andrew Johnson. Andrew Johnson was a congressman from Tennessee who got picked by Lincoln to be his running mate in 1864. Why? As a unity movement. They wanted a union Southerner. And they got Andrew Johnson. And what's been done to Andrew Johnson's reputation in the interim? The radical Republicans, essentially, the reason that Andrew Johnson, if you're unaware, the first presidential impeachment was Andrew Johnson. And it was for violations of the what they called the Tenure of Office Act, which was a terrible law that basically said the president, once the members of the cabinet were approved, the president couldn't fire them. Well, this is stupid. But he fired the Secretary of War, who was Edwin Stanton, who was a radical Republican, and for some of the things that were going on during Reconstruction in the South. Okay, that being said, that's why this part of the 14th Amendment, and it's Section 3. This is the 14th Amendment, Section 3. No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of president and vice president or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state, who having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof, but Congress may, by a vote of 2/3 of each house, remove such disability. So, wasn't a hard and fast rule. Congress, if they respected someone, they could remove that disability. Now, Congress was in the hands of the radical Republicans, so Congress was not going to, by any 2/3 majority, was not going to lift those disabilities. Now, what's going on here? Remember, we talked about the key word in there is insurrection or rebellion against the same. Again, we talked about what's an insurrection. An insurrection is an armed revolt generally carried out in a capital city for the purpose of seizing control of a government. Is that what happened in January 6th? It is not. But this ruling in Colorado is based on the idea that Donald Trump supported this insurrection. The insurrection that didn't exist, this will-o'-the-wisp. Was there a riot? Again, yes. And did Donald Trump support it? No. He said he offered the National Guard to Nancy Pelosi, who said, we don't think we'll need that. Why would Nancy Pelosi say that? She wanted the riot as badly as some of the intelligence and law enforcement officials who had infiltrated and basically stirred up the riot. Now, I'm not talking through my hat. it's becoming obvious in questioning during hearings on this situation by members of committees who are still investigating this, when asked directly, did you have agents that were involved? Did you, how many ground personnel did you have infiltrating the protesters during January 6th? And they will not answer the question. It's not, we're not asking you to reveal who it was. How many did you have on the ground? Nope, we will not answer that question. And it's not just them. It's a national security agency. It's the CIA. It's the FBI. It's a myriad of intelligence agencies who essentially, all you got to do is listen to their testimony on the Trump-Russia collusion issue and how many times they got caught in absolute lies. And you know for a fact that they did exactly what the implication is. Now, we've got people coming out with statements. They want to redefine the riot on January 6th as an insurrection and then say that Trump supported it. He did not support it. He tried to get people to go home and stop it. He wanted a protest. He didn't want a riot. There's nothing wrong with protesting. What he wanted was a show, like the left does all the time. He wanted a show that they wanted Congress to send disputed states' results, certified results, back to the states to show why they should be certified in light of serious questions about how votes were collected. Because remember, we talked about this earlier. This is why I'm trying to tie this all together, about electors being rewarded on the basis of winner take all, and what the problems with that are. You can seize an election by simply defrauding. You don't have to defraud the whole state. You don't have to steal votes in the whole state. You only have to steal them in the major cities. Maricopa County, that's all you had to do. You had to cheat in Maricopa County. You had to cheat in the counties around Atlanta. Easily done. You had to cheat in Philadelphia, which we know happened. You had to cheat in Detroit, and which we know happened. Look, I say we know. Has it been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt? No. But what's supposed to be a public counting of votes happens, and the public is closed out of observing the counting of votes. Why? Because they're counting fraudulent votes. If you recall, that was a mail-in election. And I've heard people talking about the wonders of mail-in elections. No, 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 ladies and gentlemen. Ohio has a pretty good system for mail-in votes. There are deadlines. There are criteria that have to be applied. We have a pretty good system. Mail-in votes are still a horrible idea. Now, absentee, you know, we all know about absentee ballots. I voted absentee before. Why? Because I had to be out of town and I wanted to vote. I've voted both by paper, and I voted absentee, in-person absentee. And that's an important consideration. Those laws need to be there. But what was happening, and this is beyond doubt, first of all, we had voting machines, and I know people get canceled for that, saying this, the Dominion voting machines. Nobody has ever been able to talk anybody into looking at the algorithms, how the votes are counted. We all have heard the stories about walking in, people walking in and looking at their electronic, pressing the button for one candidate. And when they look on the sheet, when it prints it out, it voted for somebody else. It voted for the other candidate of the other party. We've all heard this over and over and over and over. I've known people who have been election watchers who were watching as people who were not eligible to vote were bussed in and tried to protest and said, if you continue your protest, we're removing you as an election watcher. Well, what's the whole point behind having an election watcher? That's the kind of fraud that went on, and you didn't have to defraud. Let's face it. Look, there were states that were going to go for Biden no matter what. California, New York, Massachusetts, but in some of those states, Georgia was up for grabs, Arizona was up for grabs, And there's a real question on whether the current governor of Arizona was, you know, Carrie Lake probably won that election and had it stolen in Maricopa County. And again, this is one of those things, winner take all. And the problems behind winner take all, the brushes aside the rural counties in favor of the urban counties, and the rural districts in favor of the urban districts in favor of the rural districts. These are facts of life. This is what the protesters wanted. They wanted those ballots rejected and sent back for recertification. That was the intent of the protests. So what happens? This riot breaks out. Mike Pence completely loses his composure and suddenly says that Donald Trump tried to kill him, you know, tried to injure or kill him and his family and all the people serving in Congress and blah, blah, blah. No, that's okay. Mike needed to be cashiered back to Indiana, where he could, you notice he ran for president. He got under 1% of the vote. And when he comes out and says, I guess this isn't my year. Okay, Mike, I don't think there's any year that will be your year. Flat out. You won't have a year. So we're trying to use an obscure clause that was designed to keep former Confederates from serving in the House of Representatives, being appointed to judgeships, serving in the U.S. Senate, serving in as an elector. That's what that clause is for. It's a defunct clause. There are no more living Confederates. And this is being used as an attempt, and it was cited in this Colorado decision. Now, what does that mean? It means that there are major problems with that decision. Was it partisan? Of course it was. Every judge who voted for that was a Democrat. And I think it was a 4-3 decision, something like that. And other states are trying this, and they're all citing that 14th Amendment clause, again, designed to keep Confederates from running for office. Donald Trump is not a Confederate. And some of them are even citing the Civil War. Former U.S. Assistant Attorney, Assistant U.S. Attorney Andrew Weissman said Thursday on MSNBC's Deadline that Americans died in the Civil War, so leaders who engaged in insurrection like the Colorado Supreme Court found former President Donald Trump did cannot run for office. The Supreme Court of Colorado may not find Donald Trump guilty of a crime without a trial, which is exactly what they did. There has been no trial. There are attempts right now to make this insurrection case, election obstruction, blah, blah, blah. It's not obstruction of an election any more than when Hillary Clinton protested and when Albert Gore protested. Albert Gore, if you'll recall, filed suits in Florida, federal lawsuits, trying to overturn the awarding of the electoral votes of Florida to George W. Bush. He tried to overturn it, and what they wanted to use was not an actual recount. They wanted to use a sampling method. They wanted to use a statistical method rather than an actual count of votes. And if you recall, recount after recount after recount, and the dimpled Chad story, all that stuff that was essentially all made up. I'll be quite honest. It was all made up. The dimpled Chad thing and the jam-packed voting by butterfly ballots. Folks, I've voted on butterfly ballots for decades. And were they problematic? I never liked the method because that whole I said, I can see where there could be a problem with those punch pins and, you know, doing multiple votes. But the fact is, Al Gore ran a suit. He tried to get the Supreme Court involved. Hillary Clinton, again, claimed she'd had the election stolen and tried to bring suits and have electors awarded to her, enough electors to make sure that she got the presidency. And that they were talking about filing suits so that Donald Trump could be removed and Hillary put in her rightful place. Look, once the elections are certified, and that's the whole point. The final certification was happening in the Senate like it's supposed to happen. The electoral votes are counted in the House, sent over to the Senate, who certifies the election. They were trying to stop the certification of those state results and have the states recertify, at which point they could easily have said, okay, now send it back to the House and to the Senate. Could that have been done? Easily. People like, after seeing that riot, everybody reacted emotionally, which was predictable. Okay. Now, I've heard now that Mike O'Reilly interviewed me Thursday on Talk of the Town, and we talked about this. There is a clause. People are saying, well, Mike asked me a question. What happens if the Supreme Court refuses to hear Donald Trump's appeal on this ruling by Colorado? And I go, well, Mike, according to the Constitution, they can't. They can't refuse to hear it. And he said, well, I've talked to other people. And I said, yeah, it's a common misconception that somehow the Supreme Court's in charge of the cases they hear. They're not. The Constitution is. And I'm going to read to you the clause in the Constitution. This is Article 3 of the Constitution, Section 2. And it's not all that complex. It's going to take me a minute, but here's Article 3, Section 2. The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority, to all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, to all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction, to controversies to which the United States shall be a party, to controversies between two or more states, between a state and citizens of another state, between citizens of different states, between citizens of the same state claiming lands under grants or different states, and between a state or the citizens thereof and foreign states, citizens or subjects. In all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers, and consuls, and those in which a state shall be a party, the Supreme Court shall have original jurisdiction. In all other cases before mentioned, the Supreme Court shall have appellate jurisdiction. Okay, the Supreme Court can pick cases in an appellate situation. But if there's a case between an individual and a state, and this being a federal election, remember, this is not a state election, even though the counting of votes in those states is under state jurisdiction. This is a federal election. This is long since adjudicated. That means the Supreme Court has to have original jurisdiction and they cannot refuse to hear the case. That's the bottom line. So, this Colorado Supreme Court kind of complicated the situation by vacating their decision until sometime in January. Why? Because that's their deadline for appearing on the primary ballot. Okay, I'm out of time, but you can see what's happening here. They're trying to make, Mike O'Reilly brought this point up, they're trying to make the feds the bad guy. If the Supreme Court dilly-dallies until after that date, then Donald Trump will not be on the ballot in Colorado and it'll be the fault of the feds and not their fault. This is electioneering and politicking at its worst. But that being said, again, I'm out of time. It's not really what I wanted to do today, but, you know, I only got an hour. So if you got any questions, then I would suggest that you send me an email. Go to www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. My email's out there. Comment on this show when it posts. Ask me a question. And I would ask that you be with me again next week for another Principles and Policies.